You can go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Administration and Operations Committee meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System. Today is July 22nd at 9:01 a.m. Can I please have a roll call?
Ms. King?
Ms. Here.
Okay. Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Quorum.
Our first agenda item is the presentation by Clifton Larson Allen of the Risk Assessment Report. Should we just start with the open session, and then I think we have to move to closed session later, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So Clifton Larson, I guess you can take it away. I'm not sure, exactly who's going to present.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you all. This is, I'll just quick introduction. I'm Ray Emery. I work, obviously CLA, I've been with CLA for 8 years, and I've done probably 20 of what I would call risk assessments and implementation of ERM. And then Bill, do you want to, just saw Bill Judd from CLA jump on, do you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll let Dan talk, introduce himself.
Absolutely. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm Bill Judd. I am a senior director with CLA, and I lead the consulting practice for CLA for the state of Wisconsin. So I've been with the company, going on 6, 7 years, and prior to that I was with another consulting firm doing similar things and had some interaction with the city of Milwaukee. Working with them with that former firm. So happy to be here and definitely looking forward to the presentation.
Great. My name is Dan Ludwig. I am the engagement director for the ERS audit plan, and as well as I was a key member of the risk assessment. I've been on the ERS engagement both with CLA and with the predecessor firm Experius since 2013. So, the benefit of having me, as part of the team is clearly the familiarity and the history of knowing the personnel as well as the processes and so on. So, and I also spend a lot of time in risk assessment, internal audit, et cetera. So
just some real quick background, we'll get right into it. Dan and I work closely with management to conduct the enterprise risk assessment. The point of this is was to develop a 3-year audit plan. Our engagement with CMERS is for 3 years, and the audit plan that we're gonna look at later is a 3-year plan, and then we'll focus on this year. If I can go to the next slide, so the, on this side, the objectives and scope were really to conduct a top-down risk assessment. That's through facilitated interviews. We did that with 10 key leaders across CMERS. And, the point is to identify critical risks that prevent CMERS from achieving its objectives. And the functions covered by the ERA were pretty comprehensive, as you can tell. It covers a lot of the operations of CMERS. I don't think anything was left out. So that's the point of this slide. If we can go to the next slide, I'm going to kind of jog through this. So, as far as procedures, we did look at current state policy procedures during the interviews. Part of what you'll see later on in the slide deck is some of the things that CMERS is doing to mitigate risk to achieving its goals and objectives. But that's the point of item two. Item three, we created a risk universe. There's approximately 28 individual risks spread over 4 major risk categories. And then the last thing I would say here is the culmination in all of this was really to put together a risk-based audit plan. And when I say risk-based, it's based on the risk you face as an organization, and it's based on the ranking of the top 9 risk. And then if I could go to the next slide, As you can see, the 10 folks we, approximately 10 folks we looked, interviewed in the facilitated top-down risk assessment interviews was pretty comprehensive. It covered, you know, most of the key leaders across the organization. And then next slide, these four broad risk categories, strategic, operational, reporting, and compliance, those are pretty classic risk categories for most organizations, and these definitely applied to Seamers. And then the next slide, as you can see here, based on those four broad risk categories, and this is an eye chart, obviously, I won't read these, but there were 28 identified specific risks to Seamers based on that enterprise risk assessment. I'll pause there. I covered a lot, but I'll pause for any questions from... Hearing none, I will move to the next slide.
This Jerry, now we can make one comment on that eye chart.
Sure.
Obviously, I think this illustrates rather graphically that there are substantial, you call them risks, I'll call them areas of important activity and functionality at the ERS. And if you haven't had a chance to look at them, please do so, because there's a lot of complexity that goes on within the pension system. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then we start to get into a little bit of the details. So as far as the risk that floated to the top based on the work effort here. And so investment management was ranked number one. Obviously, you know, it's about the organization assets being invested and protected. As you'll see later, there are defined process and controls to mitigate that risk. The next one is cybersecurity. When we get to the audit plan, we'll talk about some things that as far as the cybersecurity assessment project, but also management has, based on the interviews, we've documented as management as well controls and policies that mitigate this risk. And then the next one is benefit and disability calculation. That's pretty obvious. Again, part of the work effort was to identify what management currently is doing to mitigate that risk. Then I'll move to the next slide. Obviously the benefit and disability calculation is important, but obviously paying it to the right party in a timely manner is what this risk is identifying. The other thing, continuity of institutional knowledge, it's how well is the organization protecting itself in the case of employee turnover, and I would even say succession planning. And then risk six was PII, personally identifiable information. It's the risk of data getting out either through criminal activities or inadvertent, and then causing brand damage and other kinds of damage to the organization. Number seven, IT. It's all about the IT controls. This isn't really around, I'll call it cybersecurity threats and posture. This is really around the IT controls, making sure that the data is complete and accurate, and it's processed accurately and completely. And then liquidity, which is obvious, and then reputation made it to the list as number nine. And a lot of the other risks that we just went through, one through eight, if there is a problem there, a lot of times you'll have brand or reputational risk and damage. Obviously the public confidence and the pension assets being protected, among other things, is critical. I'll pause there. If there are questions, Dan and I would love to field those.
Are there any questions before we move to closed session?
I do.
Go ahead, Mr. Cousins.
We talk about this a lot internally, but I haven't, I see you pointed it out a little bit here, but I, the operational continuity of knowledge, and it talks in here about attracting and retaining top talent. The, we're constrained by pretty, our old, outdated, archaic city policy on paying our top talent and actually everybody across, based on city practices and pay policies. How big a deal do you see that as here? I see you keyed on a little bit. Am I being clear? We have a serious problem, and I just kind of see it as like a critical rank of five. And we've had some pay studies done for our top talent, and like our CIO, and I'm sure our executive director, and I know it goes across the table, are paid way low in their field. Are you seeing any of that in your audit here?
This is Dan Ludwig. I will say that the issue that you raise is a common issue which is raised across all sectors of government. Ray and I both work on a number of other engagements in local government, and this is always one of the top risks that they're facing right now. In terms of Siemers specifically, Siemers has done a really good job. In fact, they've done a better job than most other organizations we've seen in terms of being able to define the processes that have to be done so that in the event that there is turnover, there is a roadmap that the next person can follow, and it's an accurate roadmap. But we go through, as part of our process, we go through that review with them. The second thing that they do that really nicely is they do have a cross-training program whereby individuals within a group are exposed to other operations within the organization so that in the event that there is a shortfall, that someone within the organization can be kind of plug and played back into a role that they either had or can be escalated to that next stage. So they've done a really nice job of that and managing the talent development internally. In terms of being a risk itself, Siemers is a small organization. It has a lot of moving parts. It's always going to be a risk. So, but in terms of their mitigating activity, they've done a very nice job.
Okay.
Is that, would you like me to go into more detail?
And Tom, I would just say that's, you know, in closing on your question, I think that's a given being a government agency. You know, attracting top talent is always challenging. I'd say given that limitation, I'd say Siemers has done, as Dan, you know, articulated, has done a great job, at least the talent we have, you know, training them up and then making sure that there's policy and procedures that can be followed if there is turnover. And then, you know, that's the real risk that's called out here. The one you identified is a given, but we didn't specifically focus on how do you mitigate that risk.
Okay, yeah, I just, since I saw it as one of your points here, but it gives me some solace that you're looking at it, but sometimes the key word in here is talent, and I'm hearing a lot about that we're taking, you know, which is good that they're doing some cross training and leaving a roadmap, but, and that's fine for someone that comes in, but we want to be able to attract and retain, like the pop, like it says, talent. And that goes beyond picking up an instruction book left behind by the other guy. And sometimes this cross training in organizations can come back to bite you, because when we cross train and train up leaders, that makes them attractive to other entities that are paying better, and then we you know, we're working against ourselves by doing our cross training and talent development. So yeah, we have to be careful that doesn't backfire on us.
Right,
that's true.
Thomas, Jerry, I wanted to address your question, because I'm not sure the auditors talked about the specific issue you raised, which is that at the C-suite level, okay? And from my perspective, this is a governance issue that really is, I think, one of the issues that's being taken up by this pension task force as to, you know, really how is the city going to deal with providing retirement benefits going forward, given all the financial and legal and political constraints on it. And so it's a little bit above the head of the ERS trustees and the ERS officers. It's really sort of almost a plan sponsor issue. And I would say that this is one of the areas, because I think the CLA people, that all public funds in this country have to deal with. And I think it's one of the things that's pushing a lot of municipal and other local funds to consider becoming part of their state fund, where the state fund has a lot more scale. The WRS, for example, has 400,000 members, and the pay for their executive director, who just passed away recently, by the way, was about $500,000 in base, and in recent years, about $500,000 in bonus. They have the scale to be able to deal with that. And when you go outside of the U.S. to Canada and Europe, they have even more scale. The Ontario Teachers, for example, and it's not just for talent, but it's also for investment. When they do private equity, they just buy the whole company because they have the scale. So I think that's one of the things they're going to seriously address. And I know that you have in your organization that you manage, your president is on that task force. And it's something that, you know, I'm sure he'll keep you posted on because he's on the panel as to whether or not, you know, either new hires or all members should be, you know, taken into a, you know, merging with the WRS where they have more scale. Because that's really where this could get resolved. I don't see it getting resolved at the Milwaukee level anytime soon. The mayor has always been pretty adamant about the limitations for political reasons on salaries. And like you said, we've been dealing with it for more than 10 years, and it doesn't seem like we're in an environment where that's going to change anytime soon. Thanks for hearing me on this.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'll just leave you with keep including it in our audits, because it'll help us to justify trying to correct it across the street with City Hall. So, if I can leave that.
Okay, any other questions before we move into closed session? Okay. Do I just need to read the little closed session statement?
Yes, and then we'll do a motion and a second and a roll call.
Okay. Please be advised that the Administration and Operations Committee may vote to convene a closed session on the following items for 1 and 2 as provided in section 19.851D to consider strategy for crime detection and prevention. The committee may then vote to reconvene in open session. Can I have a motion to go into closed session?
I'll motion, Mr. Questman.
Thank you.
This is Molly. I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Can I have a roll call, please?
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Quorum. And Aicha, if you just say the time, I'll pause the recorder then.
Oh, 9:19.
Thank you. The recorder's on, if you just say the time then.
The time is 9:36.
Thanks.
So this is you know, internal audit in collaboration with management, and you know, set, you know, based on the enterprise risk assessment results. This was a 3-year audit plan that was put together. And we tried to base it, you know, on some regular rhythm. The hours, the estimated hours for each year, 21, 22, 23, is really, we tried to break it up almost a third, a third, a third of the actual budget that CLA has for this work. And as you can see, you know, I won't go through all of it, other than say the risk assessment has been completed for 21. But the you know, the next slide will have 2021 on it, so we'll cover those topics. But again, this was these projects, these internal audit projects, were developed to address key risks that came out of the risk assessment. Not all of the risks, like reputation or you know, things that we talked about in succession planning, can be assessed or audited by internal audit, but these are projects that are things that internal audit can do, either test the controls around benefit payroll process, benefit calculation process, or in the case of vulnerability, internal network penetration, that's an assessment internal audit can do. IT general controls is an example. We can test those controls. These are the kind of projects that can lend themselves to an audit or an assessment. But again, things like reputation can't be, you can't create a project for that, as an example. Let me pause there and let, Dan and I would like the opportunity to field any questions at this point on the three-year plan.
Actually, Ray, I just want to throw in real quickly. When we took the rotation plan for this year, as Ray alluded to, we built it off of what had been an existing rotation plan, and we collaboratively worked with management based upon the findings of the risk assessment to refine the plan from what it had been in the past to what it is before you right now. As part of that, I just want to draw your attention to the bottom real quick, because as you might recall in our risk assessment, we identified a lot of, we identified cyber risk as being key and critical. After having a conversation with management, the areas that we thought that would benefit the organization would also be the inclusion of two new audits this year that haven't been done in the past. And one is an external attack penetration study, and the other is a purple team assessment. A purple team assessment is a combination of the internal vulnerability assessment that has been consistently done at the organization and external. So it's kind of the bridging document. Terry, if you wanted to make some comments about that, or if anyone from the ERS team wanted to make any comments as it pertains to that, that'd be, please do.
We have Dan was alluding to was the vulnerability assessments that we do today use automated tools, and some people actually trying to do additional activities. The projects that they're proposing at the bottom is a harder hit from the outside as well, in addition to just running the tool to see if they can get through the defenses, and once they're inside, what can they do if they can get through. The purple team review is kind of goes hand in hand with that. It's basically they're using it as a combination of what's called a red team and a blue team. The red is the attacker, the blue is the defender. Purple is somewhere in between. Basically, they're doing they're attacking, but also helping us say, okay, how can we mitigate something if they can get through. So that's kind of what these two projects deal with.
Yeah, one thing I would add, Terry, on the purple team, part of what they'll do, the purple team would do, is they'll actually look at how management's monitoring capabilities when they are being attacked. That'll be that's the other component of that.
Right.
Yeah, it's the handshake.
Should we go to the 2021 plan?
I have a couple questions on this page.
Sure.
I guess my first question is, should some of these high priority ranks be on an annual cycle as opposed to a two-year cycle? I guess I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that, especially maybe accounting and finance, some of these other more quantitative heavy subject areas.
That's a great question, Acha. The thing I would say is I would say some of these areas based on risk, it's how fast will the process controls degrade or change over time. And I would say accounting and finance and benefit calculation, those areas based on past history, they don't seem, process and control changes don't seem to happen a lot. Not to say that they they can't, right? The other thing I would argue, this should be an agile audit plan, meaning this is a plan for now, but let's say I'm making up stuff, let's say accounting and finance, we're on a two-year rotation with that, but let's say we believe that there's some risk, that the risk profile is changing for accounting and finance, we could go in 2022 and, you know, take the hours from 23 to address that emerging risk or changing risk profile.
This is Jerry. I want to make a historical comment. Several years ago, we went to this three-year cycle, or put more of these audits on the three-year cycle. Way back when, Aisha, when Wally was comptroller, We had many more annual items. And just what was mentioned about that, after a while, there weren't very many audit points or very many changes. And so the prior board at that time decided that they would, put some of these on a more, delayed cycle, 2 and 3 years. So that was the history of it. But you're free, that's a very good question. And if you want to go back to annual cycle, we can certainly do it. But that's what happened. There just wasn't enough things to different to measure. So they decided to push it to a 2 and 3 year cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. It was more of a question, I guess, as someone who's used to do this, it's more of a question from that angle.
Sure.
And then also, I guess, kind of as the new internal auditor, are you as comfortable doing it on a two-year cycle as well? Which I guess you kind of just answered that question by talking about emerging risks. So, and then I guess my only other question too, and then I can open it up to the other members, is are we going to be receiving kind of a more detailed scope and objectives for each one of these audits before you start them? Because this doesn't really mean anything, right? When you just
look at
thick lines.
So typically, Aisha, when we, for every one of these projects, we co-develop a scope. It's like typically a two-page scope. I'll pick on accounting and finance. What are the sub-processes that we're going to be assessing? But one, we collaborate with management to develop that before we get started. And so that work has not been done yet, but that work will be done before we even get started. Now, I don't know what the culture here with you all is. We could have those pre-approved by you before we get started, but typically with other organizations, we create those scope of work in collaboration with management, and it identifies who the subject matter experts on their side will be involved in the project, et cetera. But, that's how we were planning to proceed, is just to develop those scopes before we got started. But we could have them get pre-approved if that's required here.
I don't think that's necessary. It's just kind of nice to see a couple line scope. When we present our internal audit plan to the finance committee of the city council, we kind of do that too, because when you just have this little line, it doesn't really mean anything. So that's all. That was really my just. I don't. Maybe we might not need the full two-page scope, but maybe like a couple liner communication or something.
And this is Molly. I think I completely agree with Aisha, because most of us aren't leaders and don't understand it or what entails in the audit itself. So it gives us a better idea what we're approving and what's entailed within the audit.
Sure. Well, we would be happy to follow up this session with some more details around each one of these projects for 2021.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, and then just on that topic, great question, Molly. But on that topic, our report too would our report out on each one of these projects would list the scope in detail, the procedures performed, and obviously the findings. So that will be, you all will get that level of detail for each one of these projects.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Did you have any questions?
I do. Tom does.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not so much a question, but I like your initial comment like at the beginning about the two-year cycle for the high-priority things, and then I understand what Jerry said about what was done back a couple years ago, but I would be much more comfortable with, I mean, I think when we're, and maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but if we're going to call something high priority and then only look at it every 2 years, it's kind of counterintuitive. What would it take to go, it seems kind of simple with a 1-3 year audit plan, high, medium, low priority. It almost begs that high priority should be looked at annually, medium priority biannually, and low, you know, why don't we do that? I understand what was done in the past, but I'm not a proponent of folks that say, oh, we had a problem here, so we should change it and scale back. Well, maybe that's why we didn't have a problem, because we were, you know, what we were doing was correct, so let's not change it. So would it add to our fee or make more work for you to do this annually? And if so, how much? And we could entertain it, because I think these things should be high priority items, should be looked at more often than less often. That's great.
And Tom, we've actually, for every one of these projects, we've developed hours estimates, but we could come back to this group with what I already said, that we'll have a little more detail that you can wrap your heads around as far as each one of these projects. But also we could say, based on what's deemed high risk, if we were to do that annually, what would that look like from an hours and fee perspective? That could be a follow-up action item on our end.
I'm for that.
Okay. Consider it coming.
Molly, did you have any
comments? No.
And then if we go to the last slide, this is just a recap of the 2021 plan hours and dollars. And again, the hours and fee estimate are based on what you just saw on the previous slide. And this,
I did have a question, Aisha, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
It's just a very silly, just from my knowledge base. Why do we call the purple team? Is purple an acronym or something? I'm just curious.
Say it again, Molly, the purple team?
Yeah, why is it called the purple?
It's kind of an acronym. It's a great question. Yeah, you might like the answer. So the gentleman that leads up our cybersecurity risk assessment and all things cybersecurity, former military person terminology that they're using. So the purple team is just it was just a color scheme that they lifted from military. I'm not even sure I know what it meant in the military, other than the purple team comes in on the back end and sees how well things are being monitored by management when you are getting hacked or you have cyber threats.
Yeah. Molly, this is Dan. Typically, a team that attacks like a hacker is a red team, and a team that defends is a blue team. And a purple team is a handshake in between the two, so that the assessment between the two is being, looked in totality.
I thought so that's where they have to hold their breath until they get it done.
That's cool. Thanks for explaining that.
I like that, Tom. Gary.
That's good.
That's
good. Well, that's what Dan, Bill Judd, and myself had to present to you all. And then we have our follow-up action items, so more to come on that.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you for the opportunity to work with, we're very impressed with the Seamers team, and they've been very transparent, and they're great to work with, and can only say good things about our partnership with them.
Yeah, at any time, they were very forthcoming with all information and candid answers, and it's been consistent for the last, as long as I've been associated with the account, so very honest.
Thank you. Do we need to vote to approve this at all, Jerry, or?
No, you can just accept and place on file with a sort of a consensus. You don't have to vote on that.
Okay. Okay, well then I guess we'll accept and place it on file. And then moving on to agenda item 2, the review of ERS internal controls and ethics policy. Please be advised that the Administration and Operations Committee may vote to convene in closed session as provided in section 19851E, Wisconsin State Statutes, to deliberate. Oh, wait, is this the wrong one? I think it falls under the first one I read, right?
Yes.
Yes, 1 and 2.
Okay. Strategy for crime detection and prevention. The committee may then vote to reconvene in open session. Can I have a motion to go back into closed session for agenda item 2?
I have a motion.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Ms. Sala?
Aye.
And if you just say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
9:54, 10:09 a.m.
Thank you.
Okay, please be advised that the Administration and Operations Committee may vote to convene a closed session on the following item, agenda number 3, as provided in section 19.851E, Wisconsin State Statutes, to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business. Whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, the committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Item number 3 is the approval of the lease for fourth floor space at 789 North Water Street. Can I have a motion to go into closed session?
Tom, a motion.
Thank you.
I'll second Tom's motion.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Ms. Sala?
Aye.
Quorum, if you just say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
10:10 a.m.
Thank you.
Sure, 10:27.
Thank you.
10:27 a.m.
Thanks. Second. And wait for Terry, please.
Oh, sorry.
All right, go.
Do I have a motion to approve the lease for the fourth floor space at 789 North Water?
Tom, a motion.
Thank you.
This is Molly. I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Do we need to do a roll call, or should we just approve it?
I can do a roll call. Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Ms. Sala?
Aye.
Approved. Quorum.
Thank you. Moving on to the last agenda item. Item number 4 is the organizational personnel update. Jerry, are you taking that?
Melody may be on the line. She wisely decided to work from home today, given what's happening on Water Street. So
people yelling behind me. ESPN is right outside of the hotel, so.
Yes. Melody, are you online?
Yes. You're mute, Melody.
I'm sorry?
She's on mute right now.
Oh, she's on mute for now? Do you have to unmute Terry?
No.
Sorry about that. I didn't know how to unmute myself.
Okay.
Regarding the personnel update, let's see, the network administrator, they're working, still working with DER to start recruiting for that position, and the pension accounting specialist, I believe Dan has selected someone to fill that position, the pension accounting specialist. She retired a couple of weeks ago. And then for the program assistant too, he'll be retiring. I think his last day is Friday, and Mike has already selected someone. So those two positions will be filled shortly, which will leave, and both positions will be filled internally, the pension accounting specialist and the program assistant too. So that'll open up a couple of more positions within ERS that we'll have to fill. So that's another daisy chain. But everything is going along smoothly. The training, even although a lot of people are working from home still, we're still able to get people in the office. They're trained up and ready to go. So, yeah. Any questions?
No, I don't have any questions, but I have a comment. I just want to point out that, you know, of many offices I have as a city budget analyst, and I have to give major kudos to ERS with internal growth and promotion and creating opportunities within that department. So this here clearly is an example of the internal promotion and grooming of staff. And, you know, this movie had retention, employee retention. It's not an also win for all. So good job, team.
Thank you, Molly.
Any other questions or comments? Yeah, I would agree. In this day and age where the only way you can get yourself a raise is a promotion, that's a great way to do it. So,
yeah.
Tom would say, I guess it's good evidence to support what we talked about earlier, CLA, that there is actually the cross training and they were using
session planning.
It's actually going on. Yep. See, they weren't just making that up for the meeting to get through. They're actually doing it.
Yeah,
we actually do quite a bit of it too in our office because we kind of have to. I mean, to survive, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got some budget, and this is a meeting. I have some budget where you can't keep people there for more than 3 months. We go to 2 years, it's like, yes. So this is really admirable and worth recognizing. So.
Good.
Okay, I think with that, that concludes our meeting. So.
Just need a motion, a second to adjourn.
We just need a motion to adjourn.
I'm a motion.
No, I'll second that motion.
You're adjourned at 10:33.
Thanks.